What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. Joining me today as co-host on the show is Josh Elliott Wolf, and we're broadcasting live from the Mobile Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and we're in the Mobile Kintec studio today because it's our pleasure to be broadcasting live at the Vancouver Giants annual golf tournament here in beautiful Tawasin Springs. And it's going to be an exciting day. Already seeing a bunch of former Giants out and about. We're hoping to chat with Brett Festerling, our pal, and of course, captain of the Vancouver Giants Memorial Cup winning team back in 2007. Hoping to chat with him in a little bit. And maybe some other alumni if we get the chance as well. Lots to come on the show. Josh, what's going on, Ben?
I'm excited. It's so nice. It's a nice day out. We've got some triple O's in us already.
Absolutely.
It's a good day.
My eyes lit up when I saw the triple O burgers.
It was the first thing you mentioned. You didn't say hi to me. You said, hi, triple O's.
And then I crushed a burger.
Yeah.
And I feel great now. So Brett Festerling at 12:30. Also, and this is very exciting, because we've got Josh here as my co-host. We also have Lena here on site producing.
Uh-oh.
And, of course, Josh and Lena together, the co-hosts of Canucks Brunch. So we're going to
We're doing a collab.
Yes. This is
You're getting brunched right
This
now.
Is a collab, as the kids say.
Two against one, Jamie.
Yes. We're going to integrate some Canucks Brunch content and do cap or no cap later on in the show. So you can start thinking about your submissions for cap or no cap. Josh asked me if I wanted to do in or out or cap or no cap, and I told him, I was like, I don't know the difference. But you choose.
Have you gone over it with Jamie yet? No.
You guys can walk me through.
I believe in Jamie's ability to understand the youth, though.
You can walk me through on air. That's fine. We'll go through a Canucks Brunch segment a little later on. Anyway, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your cap or no cap submissions in, or anything else that's on your mind right now. And a reminder, since we are here at the Vancouver Giants Golf Tournament at Tawasin Springs, you can get your Giants season tickets now. Go to giants.com/season tickets, I believe, starting at just $19. So a great opportunity to go watch some fantastic WHL hockey. Again, go to giants.com/season tickets. All right. Lots of Canucks stuff that we want to get into today. But first, we should mention the big breaking news around the NHL. The last major free agency piece is off the board. Nick Ehlers lands where I think we all expected him to land, in Carolina. 6-year deal, $8.5 million AAV for the winger in Carolina. And if you're doing the math, if you're getting your Satyar Shah on here and doing the total money math.
Total money.
Almost an exact match for what Brock Besser ended up signing for.
$250,000 more.
1 year shorter, but the higher AAV, and almost exactly what Besser signed for with the Canucks. Does it change your view of the Besser contract with Vancouver, seeing what I think most people would regard as the more desirable player, certainly as a play driver and kind of a dynamic offensive player? Does it change your view at all, seeing what Nick Ehlers got?
If there was a world where the Canucks had a chance at Nikolai Ehlers, I would be like, yeah, I would much rather have Ehlers. But realistically, I mean, there were reports that the lights in Winnipeg were too bright for Nikolai Ehlers. And if the lights in Winnipeg, I don't even know if they turn on after like 8 p.m.
Wow.
But
Lena got up from the table and immediately started the Winnipeg slander.
Yeah. But if the lights are too bright in Winnipeg, obviously he didn't want to stay in Vancouver. Go to Vancouver. He does feel like such a Hurricanes player, you know? Every time I look at the roster, I'm like, oh, that guy's pretty good. But he's not amazing,
yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel about Ehlers.
I think the difference with Ehlers from a lot of their players is he has that next level. It almost feels like a bit of a Martin Natchez replacement. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Fair.
Where it's like he has that next level of kind of rush ability.
Better than like their Taylor Hall.
So many of them are like the dump and chase guys,
yeah.
Right? And that's how they play, and that's their identity. That's fair. But I do think they're going through the process still of trying to marry some higher-end talent onto that framework. And I think Ehlers fits into that. I think he'll be a great fit there. And, you know, your point about, okay, you can compare the contracts, but one was just never going to be an option for the Canucks. We also heard that Nick Ehlers was going to prioritize going somewhere where he could compete, and we know Carolina, they win a lot of playoff rounds, or they have won a lot of playoff rounds over the last number of years.
They love winning two playoff rounds.
We'll see if they can get over the hump, if Nick Ehlers can help them get over the hump, but certainly you'll have a chance to compete there. And I really think in general, you look at all of the deals signed in total, and with a few exceptions there, I think one of the big takeaways from this year's edition of NHL free agency was that the players as a whole seemed to really prioritize fit, and whatever that might mean. There's a lot of different things that fit can mean. We can get into that, but they really seem to prioritize fit over absolutely maximizing their earnings. I think part of this is the rising cap. It's not like you have to take a big haircut to get a good fit, yeah. Right? Like Brock Besser still made $50 million total money. And yeah, could he have made more than that? Yeah, probably, but $50 million is an awful lot of money, and he got to choose the fit for him. And I think that it's going to be fascinating to see how that affects the free agency market going forward, when it's pretty easy for if a team and a player have a good relationship, it's pretty easy for them to retain that player.
Mm-hmm. I think that's something we're definitely going to have to get used to. And the other part of it is we're going to have to get used to a lot of players staying where they are because of the fit.
Yes.
They're like, I'm comfortable here.
Why leave? Why go?
Why leave if they're going to offer me? I mean, with Besser, it's like, hey, you know what? You could have gotten $55 million total money somewhere else, but you take a few million dollars less, you still get $50 million, and you get to stay in Vancouver.
You're still extremely rich, and you get to play with your buddies. You get to stay where you're comfortable with. All of those things come into play. And with Ehlers, again, it's a different thing. He wanted to leave, but he wanted to go to a very specific situation. If Ehlers had called up the San Jose Sharks and said, hey, what's the max you're willing to offer me? He probably could have made more money, but he wasn't interested in that, right? He's interested in the fit and being in a competitive market, and I think that's going to be – I mean, Florida's obviously the ultimate example, right, where those guys were not interested in leaving even a little bit. They were always going to look for any excuse to stick around, and I think that's going to be a major trend going forward in the NHL. Some other news just to kind of touch on quickly here. This happened obviously yesterday just after Drance and I signed off, but Pugh Suter is a St. Louis Blue, so they round out their forward group. 2 years, 4.125. Kind of an odd situation. I don't really understand why a deal wasn't able to be struck in Vancouver, but that happens sometimes.
There were the reports from Satyar Shah, Canuck Central, yesterday, mentioning that he's not sure when the deal was offered by the Vancouver Canucks to Pugh Suter, but whether it be weeks or months ago, there was an offer on the table from the Canucks to Pugh Suter that would have been significantly more money for Suter. And that makes sense, right? Like, I think when we look at the contract that was signed by Suter with the Blues, you go, that's, like, underwhelming. Why did you wait for free agency to get less than you probably could have gotten in Vancouver? And I do wonder if his agent kind of let him down a little bit, maybe twice.
Because when he
signed in Vancouver the first time, I was like, oh, that's all he signed for? And he had to wait till August or whatever it was. And now he's getting less than he signed for or less than he maybe was expecting again. I think it's a good deal for the Blues. I would have liked if the Canucks would have made it. I do also wonder, would their plans have changed had they known that Suter was going to sign for this much? Like, if they knew they could have gotten him for 2x4-ish.
It is interesting also because we heard the report about them from Rick Dhaliwal being very in on Christian Dvorak, right? And they offered, now he ends up signing the one-year deal at over $5 million in Philly, but I think it was Sat who kind of said they would have offered him more years but a lower AAV. Well, that gets you right into a Pugh Suter number, and I think the understanding was they would have been willing to sign Dvorak and then ship out money to still make the Besser deal work. If you were willing to do that for Dvorak, why not with Pugh Suter? So it's kind of a strange one, but anyways, the Canucks lose a valuable piece. We're basically looking at the forward group as it stands right now as the same, except you're swapping in Evander Kane and taking out Pugh Suter. We'll see how that plays out on the ice. Obviously, you gain some size, some physicality, some edge with Kane. You lose some flexibility, some defensive ability with Pugh Suter. Now, you were talking about the Blues, and first of all, I really like the fit for the Blues with Pugh Suter. There's also a report out there today from Jeremy Rutherford that the Blues are, quote, trying hard to land Bowen Byram from Buffalo. which is very interesting. Of course, they waived Nick Leddy. He gets claimed by the Sharks. That opens up a spot on the left side of their blue line. And I think this is a good opportunity as we kind of sift through the aftermath and all the ramifications of free agency to look way, way ahead, almost a year ahead, and try to predict the playoff teams in the Western Conference. And the Blues are very relevant to this discussion, right? They got on that heater late in the season, end up claiming a wild card spot in the West. And if you're a team like the Canucks, you're on the outside looking in, you're desperate is maybe a little strong of a word, but probably you're desperate to make the playoffs. Yeah. Naturally, you're going to start by eyeing up the wild card teams, eyeing up Minnesota and eyeing up St. Louis and hoping that they can fall out. I kind of like St. Louis's chances to stay in, though. Like, I really like their forward group. If they add Byram, then you've got a lot of interesting pieces on the blue line as well. Parayko, Broberg, and then Byram. That's pretty interesting. So I don't know if I have a lot of confidence in predicting a Blues collapse, especially with some of the underlying form that that they showed under Jim Montgomery last year. Who do you have as kind of the obvious targets for the Canucks to chase down for a playoff spot?
So if you're throwing the Blues in there, like, I think there are six teams that I'm fairly confident are going to make the playoffs, right? So Vegas, Edmonton in the Pacific, Dallas, Colorado. Is it safe to say Winnipeg is still probably going to be in there?
I think so. I think now, would it Winnipeg could collapse?
Yeah, it wouldn't.
I'm not betting on it.
I'm like, it wouldn't surprise me if they just missed the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm not betting on it. Like, I would still have them as a safe. Their floor is just so high with Connor and Scheifele and Morrissey and obviously Hellebuck in net. It would take probably some injuries and all of that, but they have lost some talent, so I'm comfortable putting them in the safe category.
And then I probably put Utah in there, too, to be honest.
Wow,
not to go full Thomas Drantz.
Yeah, you're like, but I'm filling in for Drantz. Yeah, I'm going to commit to the
bench. You know what? Zach Benson? Really good.
Utah's a lock for the playoffs. Yeah. I mean, look, though, I think Utah's going to be pretty good next year.
Like, all their young players taking steps, plus they add Paterka. I don't know how good the fit is going to be. I think it'll be pretty good, but
it looks good on paper.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, guys like Cooley, Gunther, Keller taking another step, and then you have a pretty solid defense core too. Maybe like you lack the high end on defense, but you still have some decent players on the back end. Like I look at them as a team that's going to take a step and be a playoff team. So if you throw the Blues in there too as a team you don't really think is going to fall out.
I'm not
going to
put them in as a lock or anything, but I also don't see them as like a naturally vulnerable wild card. You know, like, oh, the Blues, oh, they're just paper tigers. Oh, they just got that hot streak. They'll fall out. No, like I think there's some real chance to sustain their form from this year going into next season.
So that leaves one spot then.
Yep.
It is the third spot in the Pacific Division. Because
Utah, Wild. Oh, wait, Utah's stepping up.
Yeah,
right,
Utah and St. Louis make it. Then you have five teams from the Central because you have Utah, Winnipeg, Dallas, Colorado, St. Louis.
And I do think the Central is going to be pretty nasty this year, right? Like, with those six teams, now we'll see about Nashville. Chicago's obviously still a long ways off. But, yeah, Colorado, Dallas, Winnipeg, St. Louis, Utah, Minnesota. I would very much bet right now on two wildcard teams coming out of the Central, which, as you said, leaves probably the third spot in the Pacific Division if we're kind of penciling in Vegas and Edmonton for the first two spots. And I do think maybe more so than a wild card spot, I know the Kings are getting pretty roundly criticized and questions for what they did in free agency. I think that's fair. I think there are major, major questions now about that roster, about the decor. They've got some aging pieces. Yeah, there's still some young players who could step up, but if you're just comparing the rosters right now, I don't think it's out of the question at all to see a world where the Canucks outperform the Kings.
Yeah, the two, like, I don't know. The two I look at are the Kings and the Blues. And the Blues, like, we don't have to get super into that. But the Kings, I still think, like, they have the inside track, right? Like, I think they're the team that if you were a casual fan looking on to the Pacific Division, you'd be like, well, the Kings are probably better than the Canucks. Right, but I do think they need steps from young players. Like Byfield needs to show that he can be a legitimate star consistently at the NHL level, because he has flashes and he has these highlight reel moments where you're like, oh man, this guy is so talented, but he kind of has to put it together consistently, I think. And then like they have pieces. It's almost going to come down to like, can their defensive system keep them where they are. Because their defense as a whole, I remember even looking last year, and I was like, I don't know if I like their defense core, but they're solid defensively, so it all works out. If they can do that again, it's going to be tough. It's going to be really, really difficult for the Canucks to make that jump.
I think the key is, you mentioned Byfield. That's obviously really important. I think Brant Clark on the blue line for the Kings as well, because the more they have to rely on the trio of CeCe, Dumoulin, and Edmondson, the more trouble they're going to be in, right? And we know Doughty and Mikey Anderson are going to log big minutes, but they need Brant Clark to really step up and claim minutes away from that trio of veterans. Now, that could be hard to do because coaches love to play those guys for some reason.
They sure do.
In the NHL, that can be tough to do, but I think they really need him to find, like, you know, they've been waiting on Brant Clark to really kind of step in and make an impact consistently for a while. I think that's going to be huge for them. They're also just, like, they're kind of quietly relying on a bunch of guys over 30 to continue to be really strong performers. And, you know, obviously, first and foremost, you think of Doughty and Kopitar. But, like, I don't know, Darcy Kemper's 35. You know, Philip Deneau's, what, 32? Mm-hmm. Not out of the question at all that either of those guys significantly decline either. So I think the risk, the way I would look at it with the Kings is, yeah, there's some upside in Byfield and Clark. But I think the risk of what they did with their money and who they brought in, but also the age factor, I think it outweighs the upside for the Kings. So if you're just looking, okay, do they decline, do they improve, or do they hold, I think I'd bet on decline. And then the question is it enough for them to fully drop out of a playoff spot?
Yeah, and that's going to be the thing, right? The other part is, like, when you look at the Canucks, is there enough, like, we talked about it earlier, it's been talked about the last few days, essentially the roster is just going to be what it was to end last season, but you swap out Evander Kane, or swap out Pugh Suter for Evander Kane. Is that enough for the Canucks to take a step and being fully healthy, like Alvin has mentioned when he was talking to Canucks Central and doing his media availability? Is it seems like there's a lot of faith being put in, A, like, the health of this team, but also we talk about LA's defensive systems, like a lot of faith being put in the Canucks defensively.
And Adam Foote specifically also. I mean, I think it's been fascinating that when they've talked about their center depth and how they still need to improve it, Alvin and Rutherford both have stressed, you know, Foote's really comfortable going in with Pettersson. Like, Foote himself, not just us.
It almost feels like, hey, we wanted to trade for a center, but Foote just loves these guys.
He absolutely loves these guys. And that does kind of bring me to something else I wanted to chat about, because I think, understandably so, we've been focusing a lot on the risks associated with this Canucks team, and they are significant. I mean, you just look down the middle, right? Elias Pettersson, Filip Hedl, Atu Ratu. If Atu Ratu is your third-line center to start the season, which is a possibility, there's massive risks associated with all three of those guys. I did want to kind of approach it from a different lens, which is, okay, we know where the risk and maybe the upside but also the downside is on the Canucks roster. It's largely down the middle. What are the pieces you feel most confident about? What are the pieces, the players, like the confidence rankings for players on the Canucks, where you can look at a guy and say, you know what, I have an extremely high degree of confidence what we're going to get from that player on a night-to-night basis and over the course of the whole season? And I mean, look, whenever you're doing something like this, number one is pretty easy. It's Quinn Hughes. If Quinn Hughes is in the lineup,
that's fair. I was going to say Elias Pettersson, but Quinn Hughes, that's probably a better choice.
Well, I mean, some people, like, because confidence in what you're going to get doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be good.
Go both ways.
So some people might be extremely confident
about what we're going to see from
Elias Pettersson. They just might mean it in a negative sense. Beyond Quinn Hughes, I'm just, like, trying to rack my brain. Okay, who do I have zero questions about what they're going to do? The guy who springs to mind for me is Connor Garland. And you just look at his point totals, his point production since joining the Canucks. 52, 46, 47, 50. He is extremely, extremely consistent. And I mean, he got the minutes bump last year. Some of the, you know, shooting percentage declined a little bit, so that's why he didn't go well above 50. But if he's getting a consistent role, if he's in the lineup, which he almost always is, he doesn't miss time a lot, you can pretty much bank him for 45 to 55 points. And they need that. They need his playmaking. They need his play-driving ability, all of that. I think he's the second most reliable player on the Canucks. Is that fair?
Yeah, like, there's no point over the last few seasons and going into this season where I'm like, Connor Garland might have a bad game, you know?
Yeah.
There's
been points where people have been frustrated with him, but I think even then it was largely unfair. Yeah. And if you look at the total of it, as much as the conversation around him has shifted, it's like he's kind of always been the same guy.
Yeah. You've just wanted more at times throughout his tenure. I do wonder, like, again, the contract, I know people look at it, and some people aren't big on it, but again, it's essentially going to be the same percentage of the cap when it kicks in. And so if you can consistently get 50 points, like, I would bank on consistently getting 50 points from Connor Garland most years.
You,
in and around there, like, 45 to 55.
And we'll see. I mean, I don't love him on the power play, but if there is an increase in power play time, maybe a little bit of a spike if he finds chemistry with somebody in the top six and is more, you know, I guess that is the one question with Connor Garland, is it has been a struggle to find the center fit for him because he's so puck dominant as a winger. I look at like an Atu Ratu potentially as Garland could be a really interesting fit next to a big body like that, who's kind of still learning the NHL, but I guess that would be the one question mark, is does he finally click with a top six center, and in this case it's Pedersen or Hedl, and does that allow him to get to kind of that next level of production? The other guy I had on my list is Kiefer Sherwood. Now, Kiefer Sherwood, career highs last year, so I'm not banking on that.
Yeah.
Like, the shooting percentage will probably dip, you know.
Got to do the Satyar shot. He's getting 70 goals next year.
He might not get the bounces and all that. But he might be the most, like, predictable player. You know what I mean? You know exactly what he is going to do. He's going to get out there. He's going to skate really hard. He's going to throw some hits. He's going to shoot the puck a ton whenever he has it on his stick in the offensive zone. Again, the bounces might come or go, but from a process standpoint, I think you know exactly what you're going to get from Connor Garland. And then the last two I had on my list, the five Canucks I'm most confident in, it makes sense because this is a strength of the team. It's a couple of defensemen. And it's Filip Hronek, especially if he's partnered with Quinn Hughes. I think we have a very good idea what to expect from that pairing on a night-to-night basis. And then I'll throw Marcus Pettersson in there as well. I think Marcus Pettersson, the addition, people may be sleeping on it a little bit because the end of last season since he joined, or after he joined the team, there's guys in and out of the lineup. Pettersson wasn't playing. Hughes was playing sometimes, but not really at full health. I don't know if we've fully appreciated what a good defensive defenseman he can be and just how much he can help this team. But I think people are going to realize this year he's primed to make a big difference for this blue line.
And just, like, consistently, too. And that's what, when we're talking about confidence, like, night in, night out, what you're going to get, you got a pretty good idea of what you're going to get from Marcus Pettersson most nights. I'd almost throw in, to a lesser extent, and who knows if he's going to be in the lineup every night, Derek Forbert.
Yeah, I thought about Forbort too. Again, it's just, like, rock solid, Mr. Dependable, the penalty
good
killing,
on the penalty
all
kill,
of that,
yeah.
Right? Like, Forbort, it's a good shout. There's no element of chaos to Derek Forbort's game. You can pretty much book what you're going to get from him. And we go through this exercise, and the guys I had, right, it's Quinn Hughes, Connor Garland, Kiefer Sherwood, Filip Hronek, Marcus Pettersson. There's only one top six player in there, and it's Connor Garland, right? Yeah. And if you were to do the reverse, like, who has the biggest question marks?
There's a lot of dudes
Elias
in the top
Pettersson.
Six.
It's Filip Hedl. It's maybe Evander Kane. It's like, hey, Jake DeBrusque had a career high, but he also did a lot of the work on the power play. Can he keep that going? Can Brock Besser get back to a 40-goal pace? So it's like almost every other player from the top six would be on the reverse list.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like, I mean, it's so much is going to come down to how good this top six is next season. And that's not to say it has to be amazing, but just like good enough that you can win these games 3-2 or 2-1. Like the idea of the Canucks playing these high scoring games is generally not going to go in the Canucks' favor next season. So you got to find a way to get enough from the top six while also being solid defensively.
All right, it is Canucks Talk. We're live at Tuawson Springs for the annual Vancouver Giants golf tournament. Again, go right now to Giants.com/season tickets. It's never too early to get your Giants season tickets for the upcoming season, starting at just $19. And we got our guy, Brett Festerling, standing by next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
So what's the general banter you want to talk about?
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It is Jamie Dodd and Josh Elliott-Wolf here live at Tuawson Springs for the Vancouver Giants annual golf tournament. And as a reminder, you can get your Giants season tickets now. Go to Giants.com/season tickets starting at just $19. Now joining us, former Vancouver Giant. Of course, he was the captain of the Memorial Cup team back in 2007. Former NHL player, and you hear him here regularly on Sportsnet 650. He's our guy, Brett Festerling. Brett, what's going on, man?
Not much. I'm excited to golf on a Thursday.
Yeah.
And be out, see some old faces. It's good. It'll be a great day out here.
We got to do the mandatory. How's your golf game right now?
you know what? Three kids are getting in the way a little
that happens.
Bit. Yeah. I did tell my wife I loved golf, and then we decided to have a fourth, so that's coming in September. So my golf game is average right now, we'll say.
Well, you made a tactical choice. You decided to go for the kids over the golf. That's an admirable decision.
Yeah.
Good for you.
It's a good move.
Yeah.
It's a good move.
Yeah, ask me in 4 hours, and we'll renegotiate that.
So we're fully into to off season mode. What have you? We can like get into. We'll get into the Vancouver Giants part of this as we go on. But what have you thought about what the Canucks have done for the first few days here? Bringing the guys back, band back together.
Besser was. I didn't see it coming. I really do like it. Right, Kaner. I like it. He's a polarizing figure, obviously.
Yep.
But I mean, the biggest thing coming out of a year where it seemed like you had dressing room issues or culture issues, whatever you want to call it, I think you need that core that wants to be here and wants to be passionate about playing in Vancouver and winning in Vancouver. And I think you had that with Besser, a guy that's passionate about it. Demko, obviously, it seemed like he was passionate about wanting to stay and be that guy. There's that. And Kaner's coming back to a hometown where I think he can dig in. You know, you get a relatively painless look at a guy that does have certain skills that are hard to come by, whether it is that physicality mixed with that skill, that ability to score. I know he's getting older, but in terms of mixing up and down the lineup, that's a really nice fit. You get a painless look at him for a year, and then you get a guy that can be passionate about playing here and winning in Vancouver. So I think in terms of addressing that locker room, whatever, rumors, culture, I think they're locking in guys that can be passionate about playing in Vancouver and want to win here. I really like that.
Yeah, and on Kane, I mean, as you said, polarizing. And, you know, we hear, like, hey, there was no issues whatsoever in Edmonton, right? But you also think, well, that's maybe a stronger dressing room than the Canucks have with McDavid and Draisaitl. What's going to be the key, do you think, for making that marriage work here, going from Edmonton to Vancouver for Evander Kane?
Yeah, I mean, I think once you get the fans on your side, it's nice. I like Evander's game because he does play with an edge. I'm old school that way. I think you're seeing the league go more in that favor, and I think he adds more depth in that type of play to complement a guy like Dakota Joshua, who we like when he's physical, Forbert on the back end, even Hronek. You know, some of that physicality and grit, and then the ability to score on that. We saw, obviously, Sherwood was lights out last year, but you see how when that marriage works, it can be really nice, and fans can really kind of lean into that and love it, and I think Kaner can bring that. So I think if he plays his game and that kind of sandpaper he can bring to the game along with a couple of goals, I think that just gets that kind of train on the right tracks and people can get behind him.
I do kind of wonder, too, with, you know, the Canucks bringing the three guys back, and it's essentially going to be the same room, and then you bring Kane in. I do wonder if that helps to an extent of like, hey, you have these guys and you're just bringing one new player in as opposed to a few new players and Evander Kane. Could that help kind of soften the blow of potentially a polarizing player and trying to fit that player into the team?
I think if you lose a guy like Besser, right, and that core is smaller and you have less of those kind of consistent voices that have been there for a while coming in, and then maybe Kane comes in, that could grab the room a little too much. When you have the older guys that have been there where he can just kind of slide in and find his way on his own, not necessarily have to go over top of it and be a loud voice in the room, I think that just lets him settle in and find what his role is going to be. And then I think you got a guy like Hughes that seems very respected, you know, and he's going to be probably not in the media, but like quiet in the dressing room, an easy guy that can kind of step in if you have to. But Kaner's what, 35 now?
33, 34.
Yes, and he's got four kids. He's settled a bit.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people that remember Kaner from a 22-year-old in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And not necessarily this mid-30s kind of veteran with the family. And, you know, I think he's a little more chill than people are giving him.
Maybe more than his Giants days.
Yeah, yes, exactly that. He's not cutting in the buffet after the Mem Cup first guy anymore.
All right. We won't get into that part of it. But as you mentioned, the other factor is, like, he wanted to be here, right? And we heard, you know, he had some control over where he ended up, and he wanted to come home and play for the Canucks. And that's really been a theme of everything the Canucks have done. You know, hey, Besser really wanted to be here. They were able to get it done at the last minute. They, the first day possible, they get Demko and Garland done to extensions. What does that say to you about the culture here, and also because it's been questioned so much, right? And it would be easy to imagine, okay, hey, it looked like a mess from the outside. Maybe these guys want to go elsewhere. So I think some people were maybe a little surprised to see so many people signing up to lock in long term here.
Yeah, I mean, from when I played, obviously Canucks were winning in President's Trophies and going to the finals when I played in the NHL. But Vancouver was one of the top cities to go to. It was a destination place. Sedin's, you know. Just go up and down the list between Roberto Luongo, Bieksa, Kessler, all those guys. Guys wanted to come to Vancouver to play. They hated playing against there, but Vancouver was a destination. Now, I think it doesn't matter what city it is. It could be Buffalo. If you have the group of guys that are passionate together and want to play and win there, the culture just, it's going to be good and you're going to find the winner. Obviously, it's easy to look at Florida and give all these reasons of what tax stuff or whatever. But you just see groups of guys that buy into whatever it is together in cities that enjoy it. You can go back to old Detroit teams, you know, those kind of places that might not be the most desirable cities, but you have a group of guys that want to win together, committed to each other, that just kind of breeds that competition and that success. I think that's what the positive is coming out of guys that want to play in Vancouver for Vancouver.
Especially because when you look at the options available to the Canucks this offseason, it was like, well, they're probably not getting any of like the big-name guys, and they're not going to be able to make a big trade. So when you can at least keep the guys that want to be here, and then you mentioned like help build the culture and have the core grow, eventually when you can go out and get these players, it seems like it's going to be a more desirable location in the future if you can keep building the culture up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It comes down. Guys want to win. That's how it is. They want to be a part of a group that wants to win, and they want to win. And then if you can do that in a city like Vancouver, you know, the sky's the limit in terms of, especially if you're a local boy, in terms of what you can do for the rest of your life. So it's a positive you can build out. Now, July 1st, I think, is so hard now to get free agents and just acquire certain assets. So they're going to have to do it along the way. We've seen Alvin and Rutherford be very – kind of, you know, figure those puzzle pieces out along the way during the season. So hopefully they can do that and keep chipping away at adding assets here.
And obviously a big question mark. Well, before I get to the center position, I do want to ask, because it's great. You know, on the one hand, I am really heartened, I think, for the Canucks that these guys want to be here and they obviously like playing together. But I also can't help but think, like, well, these guys have been here for a while and it hasn't consistently translated to on-ice success. There's been blips of it, but it's never really carried over from year to year. What do you think the key is going to be for this group, right? Hughes, Pettersson, Besser, Demko, throw Garland in there now that he's locked up, to translate, okay, hey, we like each other, we like playing for each other, we get along off the ice, that's important. How do they translate that to consistent success on the ice?
Yeah, a big part of that's probably going to be Foot.
Yeah.
And how, kind of the tone he sets in camp and what system they roll with. Do they stick with the same system and go through that process? Obviously, they tried to change it a little more last year to open up that rush. That didn't seem very successful early in the year. But I think it starts there, that message, and then how much Foot can get them to kind of buy into that message. I think if you look at the Stanley Cup final this year, I think that was a huge discrepancy between the Oilers and Florida in terms of there's a game plan. Florida seemed to stick to that game plan, and Oilers having to react to that way more than the other way around. Whereas, you know, Florida had, I think, two guys averaging over 40 seconds in shift length, and Edmonton had two guys under it. But you could tell they just had that game plan over the boards, go get the job done, get off, and that's hard to play against. So whether that's how Vancouver plays or not, I don't know, but it's having that consistent message that guys can buy into on a nightly basis and then kind of baby steps, gain momentum off that.
I think that was one of the really underrated things about Florida is just how well coached they were. And, like, everyone knows Paul Maurice is a great coach, but you saw just the way they played and, like, hey, there's a turnover in the offensive zone, and instantly the other two forwards beeline for the net, right? They're like, we're going to the net because we know that's where the puck is going and we're going to try to clean up the trash. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about the Canucks, obviously, with a weakness relative to other teams down the middle, a lot of question marks. It feels like the system and the buy-in to kind of compensate for that is going to be even more important for the Canucks than a lot of other teams, right? When you don't have those studs down the middle.
Yeah, I mean, centers have become so important in the D zone and as defensive play because they're just kind of that fill-in support everywhere. And, yeah, unfortunately, it was what it was. You have to get rid of Miller. That creates a bit of a vacuum into that center position. Now you lose Suter, who has been that kind of fill-in. So there's going to be question marks there, and that's going to be part of that kind of, you know, figuring out process is going to have to cauterize itself, and that's where you find other guys that step up, or you have to get a piece, or as a system, you need to learn to protect that middle of the ice. I mean, I don't think we're going to hear guts as much this year, hopefully. but you know what I mean? Like, that's something that's going to probably try to get exposed, or other teams might try to expose that, and you're going to have to figure out what you need to do as a group to solve that.
I did see they still had in the dressing room when they were welcoming the prospects in Meet Pressure with Pressure. Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know
all
what
the slogans are still
on the
wall.
I don't know what the slogan turnover is going to be from Talking to Foot.
It'd be great if he was just like, you know what? Same one.
I still believe it.
I'm playing the hits. What do you think of the – because there was a lot made about the Canucks hiring Foot, especially as Abbotsford was going on this run and people wanted to see Manny Malholtra in Vancouver. What do you think of the hiring of Adam Foot as head coach?
I mean, he's obviously got incredible experience, and even on the coaching side, I think he's well-respected. He's going to be that quiet, more probably – kind of rock on the back end, and when he speaks, everybody pays attention thing, I think. But I mean, I like it. I really liked kind of the model where, not that Manny wouldn't be respected, he's so respected and he works harder than anybody I've ever seen, but Manny's going to get his shot. It just seemed like that the timing of it, you didn't know how far Manny was going to go. They had Foot, they obviously liked him, so I like it. Manny's going to get a shot somewhere. Great job by Manny, by the way. That
no
was
kidding, huh?
Incredible. Yeah, those are not easy trophies to win.
Yes.
So to have that success in Abbotsford is just great for the entire system, for the Canucks.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And just we've heard from a lot of different people about like how hard it can be to get all the different types of players on an AHL team to lock in and pull in the same direction, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, he did that incredibly well down there.
Yeah, and I mean, if we get into the AHL part, but it's tough because everybody's got a different agenda.
Yeah,
you're trying
exactly.
to, like, you, it sounds bad, but in certain ways, you don't want guys to have certain success because it's the exact guys you're competing against for your dreams. So it's a weird dynamic. So to get everybody to buy in and have that and realize that you have that individual success from team success, good job for Manny.
Hey, I wanted to ask you as well about a division rival of the Canucks, Brad, because I know you've been doing work for the Kraken, covering that team, and not the most active offseason, which I think you could say about a lot of teams. It seemed like a lot of guys stayed put. Teams that wanted to be aggressive maybe weren't able to do so. So from my perspective, they're probably counting on, you know, Beniers and Wright to take big steps forward. Is that how kind of you see it, that those players down the middle are going to be the key for the Kraken if they take those next steps in their careers?
Yeah, that's the big question, if they take that next step. I think they did this year.
Yep.
Obviously, Beniers got paid like he was going to, you know, a couple seasons ago. But he was really sturdy. As soon as you saw Kaapo Kakko come in, that line was a legit, I think, second line in the NHL. I don't know if they have that full first line talent, but they're going to, same thing, they're going to have to do it by committee. Mm-hmm. And Wright took huge steps. Shane Wright can be a really good player in this league, so I'm looking for him to exactly that, get better in that center of the ice. And then they got pretty good depth. I like the Marchment pull. I thought they got him pretty cheap from Dallas for a big body. Lindgren, we'll see. You know, I think they're set for, you know, it's a buyer beware kind of contract. He can go there, get probably more ice time than he would have on like a Colorado, and then maybe fit in with a guy like Montour. We'll see there. But I don't mind that. And you're right, they've been relatively quiet. Go get Matt Martin or, the goalie for, you know, to take over from Grubauer. Maybe Grubauer doesn't find his game that he kind of lost last year, so we'll see. But I think they did take steps forward in certain parts last year. Obviously they need to improve that record, but the center ice does look pretty good with Chandler Wright and Beniers.
I did you mentioned Kaapo Kakko, and he was kind of he was interesting to me because when he went to Seattle, it kind of felt like he took off there and found more of a role. He had 30 points in 49 games. Is there still more room for him to grow as well with the Kraken?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the more that Beniers can kind of elevate his game, you're just going to see that grow, become one of those pairs. Because those guys, Kaapo does have a certain skill set in terms of keeping pucks on the wall and making plays that a lot of guys don't have. He's just got that kind of Finnish European kind of sturdy, hold it on the wall and then find guys with really nice passes. I think he's a really good player. I think he was, you know, lost his way in New York, but Seattle, I think he can take another step. So he's been a huge addition for them.
Brett, we'll let you get going in a couple minutes here, but I mean, we are at the Vancouver Giants annual golf tournament here, and of course, you're an alumni, and what's it like to get out? You know, I'm sure you're seeing tons of old faces. It must be a pretty good feeling, huh?
Yeah, it's fun. Like, you know, it's one of the best memories of my hockey career, yeah, let alone my life, winning championships here and some of the friendships. So it's amazing to see everybody. It's still going. Obviously, I wish them nothing but success, yeah, and try to be involved when I can. And it's nice to get out here. And I'll see guys like Lucic, one of my best buddies. I haven't seen him in probably 2 years. So yeah, he'll be out here. Wacy Rabbit's here. Kevin Seibel, some other alumni, so it's fun to catch up.
Pretty special, and yeah, I mean, you're the captain of the team that's won the only Memorial Cup in the franchise's history. Like, that's got to feel pretty cool, huh?
That's pretty good. The one time it was mentioned on I think it was a Sportsnet broadcast, Brad May was doing, like, yeah, analyst work. This is, like, probably 10 years ago, and I played with Brad May.
Okay.
And then he mentioned, he's like, the captain, Milan Lucic.
Brad, come on!
I text Matt Mayday, like, come on, man, I played with you. Send him a picture. But, yeah, it does feel really good.
Well, we're giving you credit on this show. It wasn't Luch. It was Brett Festerlin. Brett, have a great round today, man. This is awesome. Always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this. That is Brett Festerlin, former Vancouver Giant, as I said, captain of the 2007 Memorial Cup winning team. Of course, NHL player and contributor for the Seattle Kraken as well. A lot of different roles for Brett Festerlin, for our guy. And he joins us tableside here. And interesting to hear his kind of thoughts on the culture question for the Vancouver Canucks. And I think really, as much as we talk about, will Elias Pettersson bounce back? Will Filip Hedl stay healthy? How will Evander Kane fit? The goaltending tandem? What level can they hit? What level can the young players hit? There's all these on-ice questions, but I got to say, probably the most significant question is a cultural one, I think it's fair to say. Like, as I said to Brett, it's great that all these guys wanted to be back, and I understand prioritizing the players who are committed, who really want to be Vancouver Canucks, but this is a very different situation than Florida, where they've had incredible success. This team has been very disappointing. And so I guess the question for me is, what internally does the team, and I'm talking management, coaches, players, what internally do they think is going to make it different, not just for this season, but, I mean, they're hoping, assuming if they can get Quinn Hughes signed, they're hoping this is like a 4, 5, 6 year stretch with these players. What's going to make it different going forward? I think that's going to be we're going to start to get an answer if it is going to be different, but I think that's got to be one of the biggest questions for the Canucks next year.
Yeah, and if it isn't different, you're going to have a lot more questions about what this team is going to be long term, yeah, right? Like, I think the bringing it back, you know, getting the band back together, doing all that, it can either be a really good thing or a really bad thing.
Yes.
It could be a good thing if everyone together pulling on the same rope goes, hey, we came back to Vancouver because we want to win here. And we think it would be that much more special to win in Vancouver. I think that could go a long way in trying to get Quinn Hughes to stay in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a bad thing if they're like, I'm comfortable in Vancouver. I know Drantz is like, his saying is people don't like moving their stuff.
Yep.
Maybe that was part of it. And, you know, you just want to stay where you're comfortable. That would be the bad side. You hope for more of the former, but I think a lot of those questions are going to be answered rather quickly
now,
this season.
To the point of, well, what's going to be different going forward? I mean, there is one kind of elephant in the room that I didn't mention, which is the absence of JT Miller. And I don't want to kind of embrace the idea of him as a scapegoat, right? That it was solely his doing that the team collapsed last year, or the locker room fell apart, or the rift between him and Elias Pettersson. I think there's plenty of blame to go around. But I mean, if you're just looking for at a literal level, what is different? What is going to be different? That's a massive one. Now, mm-hmm, I go back to when he was traded, and there was a lot of people that hoped, like, okay, hey, JT Miller's gone. Are we going to see a different version of Elias Pettersson? We did not. And some people will say, oh, down the stretch, before he got injured, it's like, No, not really.
I will say, and not really. You're right. But I will say it might have been a lot to expect, like, hey, Miller's – it almost been would have been a worse reflection on Elias Pettersson.
Oh, it would have looked really bad.
If JT Miller
come out shot out of a cannon and, like, I'm dominating again, it would have looked really, really
it
bad.
It would have been a bad moment.
But at least you would have had dominant Elias Pettersson back. You know
pros
what I mean?
And cons.
So you'd take it, even though it would have been a very, very strange look. But I do wonder how much of it is – because we can say they're running it back altogether, but they're running it back with one major difference, and that's JT Miller is no longer here. I wonder how much of a difference we should expect that to make. Is that something that's going to significantly improve the chemistry? I guess the other thing you'd point to is no Rick Tocchet. It's Adam Foote instead of Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, and I will mention the flip side of the Miller thing, too. Bringing in Marcus Pettersson, like one of the big selling points for Marcus Pettersson and one of the big reasons this management group wanted Marcus Pettersson was for his leadership and for his ability to like be one of the leaders on this team, especially in the out. Like, as much as some people would look at JT Miller and go, you know what, maybe he wasn't the best fit, maybe he wasn't bringing the room together as much as it should have been, there's still an absence of leadership when someone like JT Miller leaves the team.
It's almost like even if you don't think he was doing a good job of leadership, there's still a vacuum.
Yeah, he was
you
still
know,
doing it.
Someone's got to step up and do it as a result, right? And as you said, that could be Marcus Pettersson. And I think guys like Connor Garland, Brock Besser are really going to have to step up in that respect too now. They're part of the core officially.
I do want to see them take a pretty big step leadership-wise. And that's not to say they weren't, but – when you start fresh, like, that can be difficult to do mid-season when you trade JT Miller, right? For guys to the next day come in and be like, hey, look, I'm going to be more of a leader in the locker room. It seems fake almost at times, right? If you walk in the next day or the next week trying to do that, you come in fresh to start a season, especially after signing contract extensions, and you're like, hey, I'm going to be here for a while. I want to set the tone. I think I would like to see more of that setting the standard from Brock Besser and Connor Garland.
That's how I'm going to come back to the 650 studios in September. It's a new me. I'm a leader now, guys. Deal with it. I'm going to have a lot
I'm not buying in. I'm telling you right now. I'm not buying in. We're going to have a JT Miller, Elias Pettersson situation.
We were talking about trying to organize like a year-end get-together for the crew at 650, and I was ragging on Bear. I was like, come on, Bear. Like, get on it. Just start organizing. He's like, well, you could send it. I was like, if I send an email to everyone inviting them to the thing, then zero people. People are going to be like, Jamie can't tell me what to do. I'm not responding to this. He's not my boss.
I wouldn't even open the email.
Yeah. Like, who does Jamie think he is trying to organize something? Get out of here.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm going to come in. I'm going to really assert my leadership next year, just like Brock Besser and Connor Garland might do for the Vancouver
Canucks. You got to change your whole look, though.
Yeah, that's probably not happening.
Too much work. He's already out. Not setting the standard.
I am not willing to put in the work necessary, it turns out, if it involves shopping for clothes. I'll take a pass on that. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and this is very, very exciting because next on Canucks Talk, we've got Josh Elliott-Wolf here. We've got Linus Atagian here. They, of course, are the co-hosts of Canucks Brunch. And we're going to do some Canucks Brunch next. We're going to do cap or no cap.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to explain what it means now for people who might not listen to Canucks Brunch?
Text in submissions, 650-650, the Dunbar Lumber text line. Essentially, you send in a take, and we will tell you if it's cap. That means lie, Jamie.
That's a lie.
Or
yes.
No cap, yes. Which is the truth.
Yes.
And then we'll have some of our own as well.
Yes.
Which is me telling you we got to think of some
so,
in a break here.
It's not in or out. That's completely different.
In or out.
Cap.
In or out, you send in takes, and we tell you if we're in or out on those. They're
so
wildly different concepts.
I don't know how I could possibly get confused. Yeah. All right, cap or no cap. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your submissions in. It is Canucks Talk. We're live at Tawasin Springs for the annual Vancouver Giants Golf Tournament. It is Sportsnet 650.